This is the seventh episode of the Walk Podcast. Hi, my name is Cindy Lehman. I'm the former editor and publisher of Walk Magazine and the host of the Walk Podcast. Yes, you are hearing thunder in the background. My house is not soundproof and it is storming while I am recording this. I really just want to get this episode done or I would hold off. Anyway, in this episode, I have an interview with Wendy Baumgartner from walkingabout.com, and we talk about hydration and how a lot of people we both know probably don't drink quite enough water when they're training and racing. What's really exciting to me about that interview is it's my first phone interview, and that's going to give me quite a bit more options for possible guests for the podcast. Before that, you will hear a conversation with my friends Deb and Pat regarding the Biggest Loser half marathon that they did this summer. And they did the one in Pennsylvania and they had a great time. It took a little bit of convincing to get my friend Pat to do the podcast, but she warmed up to it pretty good and I think it was a really good conversation. I hope you enjoy the episode. Walk with me. Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity. Hi, this is Cindy Lehman, and I am with my friends Pat and Deb today, and we're going to talk about the Biggest Loser half marathon. They both did it. I did not. And we are outside, so there's going to be quite a bit of background noise. Hopefully, it will just be birds. So, Pat, say hello.
Hi.
And Deb, say hello.
Hello.
Okay, and do you guys remember what the date was of the Biggest Loser half marathon?
It was Sunday, June 22nd.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, what I probably should ask you about first is the expo. When you first guys got there, you went to the expo. What was it like?
Well, the expo was small in terms of the auditorium that they held it in. It was just a few exhibits. But what was amazing about it was really the energy in there and getting to see some of the Biggest Losers from mostly Session 5, Series 5, and just seeing them and their energy, and it was just amazing. And they had exercises going on, and you could get up and exercise with them, and it was just so fun to see them for real since they're always on TV.
And I'm not a big watcher of the Biggest Loser, so it was fun for me that Pat knew who everybody was, and she was all geeked up about him. So it made it really a lot more fun for me to watch her.
I can't imagine it would be easy to do exercises day before a half marathon.
No,
we didn't participate in those. We cheered.
That's right. Yeah, it was fun.
And was there a pasta dinner or anything the night before the race?
No.
Nope.
Okay. No pasta dinner, but what they did was give you, quote, free money, so you could go to the casino, which was nearby, and you could, you know, gamble. And we had dinner there. They didn't have a horse race that night, so we were able to eat at the track up in the clubhouse, and it was very, very good.
That was very nice. And the food was really good.
Really good.
I had some lasagna and Pat, you had some fish. It was really good food.
Mm-hmm. Probably better than we normally eat the night before, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. The next morning, what time did the race start?
Eight. Oh, it just started at 8.
It started at 8. It was nice. The breakfast had a little continental breakfast, so I was able to have my peanut butter on toast. And
yeah, that opened at 6, so that was nice.
That was perfect.
Yeah.
And when you lined up, were there corrals?
No.
Okay.
And that was everybody kind of bunched up.
Oh, no.
Because there were no corrals. They said, get in the corral.
Yeah, we couldn't find them.
But there were no... I guess later we saw people with the pacers. Signs. But we didn't see them at the start.
Right.
Okay.
We couldn't see them.
So you guys probably went a little bit back, but not very far back then.
Right. We were
pretty front. Yeah. We kind of went up in the front. Because we're not messing with this corral.
But, you know, we stayed to the side,
yeah,
and we were fine.
It was fine.
Yep.
So when the race started, did you, well, first of all, at the beginning, did they do anything special that you don't normally do during a race? I mean, anything that made you more excited to be at a Biggest Loser race?
Well, they had one of the former Biggest Losers, he was singing. He was announcing and he was singing, and they said his band would be at the end to bring us in. And that was kind of neat.
That was neat.
So the race started, well, actually, when you're in the corral and you're looking at the people who were there, did it seem like a typical race to you?
It did.
Yeah.
Okay.
It did. People were pretty fit where we were. And
I guess I was kind of expecting that since it was a Biggest Loser race and because of the type of audience that the show draws, that there would be a lot more first-time half marathoners in this race.
I really was. I was expecting that. And I didn't see a lot of people like that.
Okay. So once the race started...
The first mile. The first quarter mile.
Oh, yeah. It started uphill.
At a 45-degree grade.
Yeah.
We're like, what would you say that was? A quarter mile or a half mile?
It was a good quarter mile at least, and it was uphill starting, so that kind of should have given us prepared us for what was to come.
And at that point I said, well, I'm not doing this race for time, I'm just going to have fun. I'm just going to finish and have fun, and that's what I did.
So were you thinking the same thing?
I was thinking, I said to Deb, I'm going to go for 3, that's what I wanted to do, and I just missed that, but... I was still trying.
Yep, not by much. You missed it by much. Yep.
So after the first giant hill, when did you encounter Flat?
I don't think we did.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit, Flat. And every
time you turned around, there was an incline or a hill.
Every time you turned around,
and Deb and I got separated, and I just kept saying to myself, you've got to be kidding. And then, you know, the thing about these races, it's a lot of psychology. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kept saying, okay, look, you do hills every day. This is just keep moving your feet. You'll be fine. So I was trying to do that, but I was like, I was getting tired, I think, because it was hot. And I kept getting 2 cups at every water stop.
Oh,
I was
really,
really thirsty and warm.
It was getting warm. And I kept thinking through, like, the first half of the race was, I'm so glad this is not my first half marathon. It was that hard. And I can't imagine.
It wouldn't have been a good one for new people.
It wouldn't have been.
You had to have some endurance and, yeah.
And there was a 5-hour limit, and I thought, well, surely I'll come in at 3 with a 5-hour limit, but it was... That 5-hour limit was a safe limit with all the hills were just incredible.
What was nice, 2 things. One, they had a bicycle patrol everywhere. So they were always watching for people's safety, probably more than I've seen at other races. And the water stops, I believe, were every mile. And they were really good.
Yeah.
Lots of water, Gatorade, all that. So all of that was well attended.
It seemed to be a very well organized
race.
Very
organized.
I'm very impressed with it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So at what point did you think, oh boy, no, really, I'm not even sure what I was going to ask you, but at some point during the race, you had to just think, why am I here?
Yes.
It was that hilly?
Well, there was, for me, there was a couple of the points during the race got a little confusing because they had us walking through parking lots and
really?
They had it well marked with pylons and everything, but sometimes I was confused and I'm like, where do I go? And we're turning to go back up on a trail and there was a guy sitting there, a little cheerleader. I'm like, oh, not another hill. He said, oh, keep that smile on your face.
Yeah.
You're doing fine. But it got to that point mentally for me. It's like, oh, I can't take one more hill.
Yeah.
That's similar to how it was when we did Big Sur. When I can remember, I just put my arms down and walked really slow. And I said, I just want some flat.
Yeah. But, you know, it was a beautiful course.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
a beautiful course. It was through this, parts of it were through this college campus.
And yeah, beautiful.
Tons of trees, and we were on a paved trail, hilly It was beautiful.
Were you by the river or by the lake at all?
We were up on a hill.
Yeah, the one part was really fabulous. You were climbing a hill and thinking, oh, you know, another hill. And then you could see the water.
It was beautiful.
And it was incredible. I'm like, this is why I'm climbing this hill.
Yep.
It was worth it. It was beautiful.
It was one of the most beautiful races.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Absolutely.
But it just seems strange to me that a Biggest Loser race would be that difficult, because I would have expected it would attract a lot of first-time half marathoners.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. They asked how many people were there for their first and all that, and they were very encouraging. But I just think you had to have a lot of endurance to do well in that race.
Right. Yes.
With the hills and the heat,
right.
Both of those together,
yep,
would be challenging.
Yep.
When I noticed that in the finish times that first of all, you guys both did well in your age groups, which really surprised me. And there were not walking divisions, right?
No.
Well,
but there were a lot of walkers.
A lot of walkers.
Yeah.
But it surprised me that with as hot as it was and how many hills, that both of you placed in your age groups.
Right. Well, I was four.
Oh, okay.
I was number four. But I was happy with that. I was happy to have finished.
Deb's like, I'm done. Thank God. I'm like, when's the next one?
Yeah, but you've already done how many half marathons this year?
Yeah.
Before
four.
Because you did one the week before.
No, I did
didn't
one.
Didn't you, the Cedar Point? Or, no,
that
was right after.
That was this past Sunday.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you've had so many.
So it's not like you weren't in shape.
Exactly. And it's not only, I've done, I don't know, I wish I started keeping track of how many halves I have done, but it's been a lot in the 20s or 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Easy.
Easily. Yeah.
So when you got to the finish line, was it really exciting?
Yeah.
But here's another thing. That hill we climbed up, and that first mile is the same hill we climbed down. We went down.
Oh, no.
My knees. I mean, and it was still, that 45% grade coming down for quite a while. And my knees and my hips were like, they were sore after coming down that hill.
Yeah, see, Deb said that. I didn't have that experience. I like going down the hills because I kept thinking, okay, this is a chance to make some time up. So I used them to try to catch up.
Oh, good for you.
And they didn't really bother me.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you came in, there were a lot of volunteers there.
Oh, it was just...
And they were, just cheerful and put the medal on. Good job. Very, energizing. And just coming into the Biggest Loser banner, it was like,
it was fun.
Because if they can do it, there's no reason we can't do it.
Right.
I mean, so that was kind of the...
But there weren't any cookies at the end.
No, and that was funny because Deb said, I can tell we're at a Biggest Loser race because it's all healthy food. It was fruit.
Bananas and oranges and...
Yeah, and bagels.
Aren't they really anti-bananas on that show, though?
Oh, are they?
I don't know.
I think it's one of those fruits they recommend you not eat because of the amount of sugar in it.
Oh. Well, it was...
It's a
still,
fruit.
There was no junk food, and
no.
It was nice.
I love bananas.
And water, and...
You can open them easily.
Yeah, especially when they're cut in half already.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
They're not messy to eat like oranges.
But it was just fun because, at the expo, you got to ask questions. They said whatever you wanted to ask, you could ask. And people were asking, is it really like on TV? And they said yes. And how much they work out all day and they get an agenda. And they don't know exactly what is going to be in each component of the agenda. They'll know what time, but they talked about the hardest thing was when they had to climb up sand dunes carrying those kettlebells and how hard that was, but that they are always their life told they can't do anything because they're too big, and so they have to retrain their whole mind that you can do this, you can do this. And that was pretty amazing, to hear them tell those stories.
So it was like a panel discussion.
They would just have different ones get up and
different ones stand
talk.
Up and do a Q&A.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And they said Jillian's just like she is on the show, but everything is purposeful and try to get them to be disciplined and think about themselves. And they aren't allowed to talk to their family or anything with their family because you have to focus on your own self and taking time for you and what's good for you. All was just all great messages for everybody.
They were very friendly and personable, and I think they were at the expo the whole afternoon, and I thought they were just wonderful, signing autographs and taking pictures.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
So, whose autographs did you get, Pat?
Who did we get?
David.
Yeah, David, and then the mom and
Jackie and Dan and Chelsea.
Chelsea was really cute.
Uh-huh.
She's like bubbly and just sweet as could be. She's real pretty.
So you said they were mostly from season 5. How far back ago was season 5? Was it the most recent one?
No.
Okay.
I don't know how many. I remember David because I remember when he would be on the scale, he always had that sign. You know how he had the t-shirts he was selling, had that sign on it? He had that on his body.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And I remember that.
Very
it was
nice.
Pretty cool. Very fun. I would do it again.
I'm
looking for another Biggest Loser race in a different place just to do different ones. But so, yeah, I'm looking to do another one.
How much was the registration fee?
I paid $75, and that was a little later. But I think it started out at $45 or $50.
Yeah, because I signed up like in January or something. I'm like, I got to do this. This is so cool. And it wasn't. It was like any other race.
Right.
Okay.
And then I think you could register up to the day of the race, up to the day before the race.
Nice.
And that was like $90.
Okay. That seems typical.
Right.
How many people do you think were in it?
What did they say, 600? It felt like a smaller race.
Really? Yeah. Only 600?
Or maybe 9, because they said the combination
was 1,500 or something.
Okay,
and then there was,
they had a 5K that went out.
Yeah, it was half and half. Yeah.
Boy, I really expected a Biggest Loser race would have attracted more people than that.
Yeah, and it was kind of fun to do a smaller race, too.
Especially one that's well organized.
Yes.
Yeah. We've done some smaller races where you feel like they forgot you're even out there.
Right.
Oh no.
No, it was great. Mm-hmm. They did. They had people to keep checking on the bikes and it was great.
Very good.
And you said at the end of the race it was just mostly fruit and water.
Okay.
And bagels.
Cold water and bagels.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
But it was just right because it was warm and you really didn't feel like eating right then.
it was just right.
But they had music outside and we got to sit a minute and just relax a minute and listen to the music and wait for our awards.
It was so exciting when your name got called.
It was fun.
Yeah. What did you win?
A certificate, Biggest Loser certificate. So now I have my certificate, my autographed bib. I usually throw my bibs away. This one I will treasure forever. And it was just so neat to be there. You just look at those people. They're so inspiring what they do. Mm-hmm. And you think, there's just no excuse that I can't do that. And how blessed I am to not have had to go through that whole process.
Right.
So
absolutely.
It's just wonderful to see them.
Were there any of the staff of the show there? Like, I forget who the MC's name is.
That lady that talked real fast, she was staff.
Oh, she
was.
Her name, I thought she was just.
She was like a business development person for the Biggest Loser.
Oh, was she? Oh, I thought she was just with the race. Oh, that's neat.
So, and they had a bus. Remember the bus?
Oh, yeah, they had a big
They had a Biggest Loser bus.
Oh, that was cool.
And it had their pictures on it and their names and. We took a picture of the bus. How fun.
I take it that you thought that the race was worth the cost.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, easily.
Definitely.
And the shirts?
Oh, they're really cool.
They're nice.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They're a nice material, and they say, Biggest Loser across, and they have a measuring tape. I wore mine to the gym the other night, and I got all kind of comments. And so I said, you got to do this. In fact, Deb knows this, but I got the card from the business development lady, and I'm going to talk to the people in our city and see if possibly we could do any kind of race in our area, because they're looking for areas that don't, like Columbus is too has too many races,
right.
So they can't really go. But we don't have those kind of races, so I'm thinking maybe
we'd
be able to do our own Biggest Loser, which would be a hoot.
Uh-huh. Oh, that would
be fun.
Oh, and you would have those hills.
Yeah, and we would have lots of hills, so we could do a repeat.
Yes, I would do it.
If someone is going to do this particular race, what are your recommendations for them to get ready for it?
Practice.
Hills.
I mean, practice hills and endurance. Make sure you're hydrated.
And I was good the whole, you know, the time before the race. I'm drinking more water lately. I'm like, oh, this will be good. I might make a 3-hour half marathon this time. But yeah, I was pretty hydrated, and I would do more hills. Luckily, mm-hmm. I'm pretty good on hills anyway, when there's not so many. But
well, as Laura always says, you need to power up the hills. I imagine after that first one, you're like, forget that.
Yeah, the power's gone.
The power's gone.
But otherwise, no, just have fun. That's what they
absolutely.
Said, have fun.
Yep.
Okay. Well, and because this one is, well, they're different all over, there's
right.
nothing you can say to prepare for that'd be different from preparing
right.
for any other half marathon other than this one in mm-hmm. Erie happened to be hilly.
Right.
Okay. Well, anything I didn't ask you about that you'd like to mention about this race?
I was very impressed with it. I went into it not knowing what it was going to be, and we had a great time and just very impressed.
Yeah, I was waiting since the new year started to go to this race just because it was the Biggest Loser, and it was well worth it. Like I said, I would do another one.
Yeah.
Well, great. Thank you very much for the time to talk to me, and I will let you know where it is.
With me. Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity.
I am talking today with Wendy Baumgartner with walking.about.com. How are you today, Wendy?
Great.
Wendy is a very experienced walker. In fact, she's part of the reason why I became a walker way, way, way back when, because I found you online long before I became a walker.
Oh, thank you.
Tell me about your background.
My background is I got started as a walker with the sport of Volkssporting, Volkswalks, back in the 1980s. And after I had been at the top of their organization, I started their website back when they created the web. And I got recruited at that time for the company that became About.com and have been their walking expert for the past 17 years.
Wow.
And in that time, in order to write more about walking, I trained to walk marathons and to be a marathon walking coach, got my certification for that. And just enjoy writing about every type of walking, whether it's just simple walking around the block for weight loss or competition walking or challenging yourself by walking 10K half marathon and marathon walks.
Well, that's great. And how many races or long distance walks do you typically do a year?
I've been doing about 10 half marathons a year the past couple of years. I decided to scale back from doing the marathon because that's just too much training all summer, and instead enjoy the half marathon because I can do one of those and stay in training for it by doing it once a month and getting in some good 9 and 10 mile walks on the other weekends. It leaves me a little more time to have a life.
Oh, I agree with you. I've only done 2 marathons, and they were so consuming of my time that I just mentally don't have the energy to even train for them.
Yeah, so you have to be so dedicated for the 4 or 5 months beforehand in order to be properly trained, and that's just a lot more time than many of us want to invest continuously year after year. It's a great event to do, to check off your bucket list and do a couple of times, but I'm very happy with the half marathon as my ongoing challenge.
In fact, I even consider the half marathon to be my favorite distance because you mm-hmm. have to for it, and it keeps you at a higher level of fitness, yet you still feel good and can go to work the next day if you have to.
Exactly.
Well, one of my main concerns right now, especially this time of year, is hydration. To tell you how uninformed I was about hydration when I did my first marathon in 2000, I not only drank all of the water they gave me at every water station, but I ended up having to stop at the Port-a-John six, seven times. Needless to say, that greatly affected my finish time.
Well, and of course, the concern with that is that if you aren't drinking sports drink as well as water, or even if you're drinking too much of both, you can easily get into hyponatremia difficulties, and you don't want to do that.
Explain a little bit about what hyponatremia is, because I don't think most people have heard of it.
Yes. Well, of course, we're always concerned about dehydration, where we aren't drinking enough water or of anything, and that's definitely a risk. But the other part of it is if you drink too much plain water, you leach the salts out of your body because you're sweating, and then you're drinking water and you're eliminating even more salt. And our bodies are very finely balanced for salt balance, and you do not want to overflush salts out of your body. You definitely want to replace water and salt, which is what sports drinks do. Sports drinks contain a little bit of salt in them, so that helps replenish the salt that you're losing through your perspiration and elimination. But you can still get into just problems of drinking too much sports drink as well as water at the same time. Studies have shown. So it's important to strike the right balance.
And isn't part of the problem with hyponatremia is that the symptoms seem very similar to dehydration?
They're very similar. And I especially saw a lot of this at the 3-day walks, which are hosted by the Komen Foundation. But they would have hundreds of people taken away by ambulance from either hyponatremia or dehydration, and often they'd end up treating them inappropriately at the emergency room, thinking it was dehydration, and sending them over into hyponatremia because they didn't diagnose it correctly. So it is a real danger because you don't know what you're dealing with when it's hot and you're sweating and you're feeling sick. So it becomes very important to get the balance right, to know your own body, and to get it right for yourself.
But you and I both know that the biggest problem is the majority of people we know who walk do not drink enough water.
Yeah.
I admit that even in 80-degree weather, friends of mine who refuse to carry water with them.
I have friends, and we actually did a great test, and this is what the International Marathon Medical Directors recommend, is on your long walk, weigh yourself before you go out, and then if you can loop back to your house or a place and weigh yourself in the middle of the walk, and then weigh yourself at the end. You should not change weight at all. Any weight that you lose is due to losing it water from your body. And any weight you gain is because you're drinking too much while you're out there. And when I did that with some of my walking friends, one of whom got into big trouble at the end of the previous marathon, was very sick when she finished, she was the one that was not drinking enough. And from then on, we made sure, we actually set a timer and reminded her to drink every 20 minutes. and that really helped. That really helped get her through without problems on the next couple of long walks that we went on. And I think that's what it could take for many people, is they literally have to set a timer.
Right. So what levels of hydration are you recommending?
Well, as the International Marathon Medical Directors recommend, is really you have to think about a cup of water every half hour. And the cup, you know, that's a measure that most of us are used to thinking about. So 6 to 8 ounces of water every half hour, which is a mile to 2 miles, depending on your pace. so you should really be drinking about that much. That's what you want to aim for. But the other thing is drink when you're thirsty and have the water available. So when you feel that thirst, you drink. There was some bad advice going around for quite a while, which got the 3-day walkers into trouble, which is drink before you're thirsty. Just keep drink. Well, mm-hmm. Unfortunately, a lot of women are really obedient to that advice. And they were the people who were getting into trouble with hyponatremia because literally they would drink before they were thirsty. But for most of us, we can trust our thirst mechanisms. There are people who will have some medical conditions or be taking some medication where they can't trust theirs. But for most of us who are normally healthy, our thirst mechanism knows what it's doing. And when you feel thirsty, you need to drink then.
Boy, a cup every half hour seems like a lot.
It's well, if you obey your thirst, you'll probably discover that's not a lot.
Okay. Well, so, you know, I typically sip when I'm thirsty, and maybe that's what the difference is. I'm not just mm-hmm. stopping drinking a cup of water.
Mhm. And if there are various devices out there on some water bottles so that people know that they're drinking enough. I've never had to use it. I'm pretty good at gauging how much water I need and drinking to thirst. But for those who need some prompting, they may want to carry a water bottle that has good gradations on it or even pencil their own onto it with a Sharpie so that they know that they're drinking more than just a little swig and they're getting a cup of water every half hour.
And if you are alternating water with some type of a sport drink, how do you recommend doing that?
Yes, most of us won't need a sports drink unless we're exercising for over an hour. So if you're not exercising for over an hour, you're probably fine just going out well hydrated and drinking every 20 minutes. But if you're going to be out there for over an hour, and especially in weather where you're going to be sweating, then you do need to think about switching to sports drink after the first hour. And basically, you'll drink the same amount of sports drink as you would of water. And they also recommend against diluting the sports drink. Many people would do that because they're concerned about sugar. But there are many non-sugared sports drinks out there on the market now, so that should not be as big of a concern as it was 10, 15 years ago. You don't have to use the sugared ones. You can buy the ones that are zero calorie but still have electrolytes in them to replenish the salts in your body.
Now, I've heard that if you're using something like a Cliff Shot Block or gels or goos of some type, that those also will replace some of those minerals. Is that true?
Yes, they will. And you can use that with plain water, and that will be fine. In fact, that's what I usually do on half marathons. I carry my own water in a Camelback backpack just because I don't trust water stops to be fully stocked. And also because I want to drink as soon as I'm thirsty. And if it's 2 miles between water stops, I want to be sure that I can be drinking when I'm thirsty. But I carry sport beans, which have electrolyte in them. They're jelly beans with electrolytes. And also the Cliff blocks, the little gel blocks. And those are great. They're very portable, they're stable, they don't weigh a lot, and then I can have them with plain water while I'm out on a long distance walk.
And they're not as, I don't think they're as messy to consume as what some goos can be, because there's been once in a while when I've had a goo and, oh man, I just could not drink enough water to swallow it all.
Exactly. Some people love goo, believe it or not. I do not like goo, and I've actually had a bad gut reaction to goo on a half marathon, which made me swear off of it. Not that it was the goo brand, but it was an energy gel. And sometimes your body is going to react badly to the carbohydrates that are in it, maybe it's just because it's so concentrated. And you do have to drink a lot to get it down, and your teeth feel like they're coated with sugar. So I far prefer the little gels or jelly beans that have the little bit of salt in them. And of course, you could go all natural. If you just take some trail mix that has some salted peanuts or bits of pretzel in it, you're golden. And wash that down with water. You don't have to go high tech or spend big bucks on it. If you happen to have some trail mix or pretzel pieces that you want to stick in a baggie and take with you, those will work just fine.
The problem I would have with pretzels would be in possibly inhaling the crumbs.
Oh, yes. Well, for slower speed walkers, it's not as big of a problem.
Right.
If you're going, I'm going full speed on a half marathon and wanting to get to the end, that's one thing. When I'm out on a pleasurable 2 to 4 hour walk with friends where we're going at an easier pace, then I don't have to worry about aspirating things as much.
Yeah, I think pretzels would taste a whole lot better then. Well, you know, another thing that's really important for people to remember is whichever way you go, whether you use a drink or one of these other products or your own things that you carry with you, you have to practice them on your long mileage days.
Yes, exactly. Nothing new on race day. That is the absolute commandment. You need to try everything out ahead of time. If on that half marathon where I had a bad reaction to the energy gel, that was something I had not used on a training walk, and I didn't realize how much it would affect me. And thank heavens there was a stray porta potty available a mile from the finish. That's all I can say.
I had something almost exactly the same happen, and it was just because the energy product I tried was a different flavor than I was used to.
Ah, yes.
So it was the same brand, but a different flavor. And so I found that the only flavor I could use in that product was vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. And I had friends who had bad reactions to everything that you know, someone who loves it. I've had at least one friend who had a bad reaction to it somewhere. So
yes.
You really do have to practice.
Well, we're all different, and we're also different depending on how much energy you're expending. If you're going very fast, your body is going to be reacting to things differently than it does if you're going at an easy pace. So that's why it's so important to try them out in a similar situation in the weeks before a long-distance race.
Now, when you are walking in cooler weather, do you still drink the same amount of water?
I probably drink a little bit less because I don't think I'm not sweating as much and I'm not as thirsty. But you can get tricked, especially if you change climates, because I'm walking in one climate, but if I go do a half marathon in a very dry climate, I may not realize that I'm sweating as much as I am, even at a cooler temperature. So it's important to try to stick to the rule of thumb about how much to drink and to really trust your thirst and drink more often if that's when you feel thirsty, or a little less often if you don't feel thirsty. But you need to drink something. So I always find it very important to carry water along with me. We're always wearing a hydration a belt where I can have a water bottle, or I always go out wearing a Camelback backpack.
Have you ever, do you use name brand sports drinks, or do you use ones that have fewer chemicals in them?
I've tended to use name brands or the store brand.
Okay. So you don't have issues with the big couple ones that are most known to people.
I frankly, I'm not someone who worries overly much about chemicals in things that I consume. So people who are very concerned about that, you can make your own sports drink at home out of natural ingredients, because basically you just need some salt and water and a little bit of flavoring, a little bit of sugar or your favorite sweetener. So those who are very concerned could just mix up some at home. You can find recipes online. And I have one on my website from way back when. But
that's a great idea.
Yes, but I don't, because it's not something I'm going to be consuming on a regular basis, so I'm not overly concerned with what's in the different ones. I definitely avoid energy drinks such as, you know, the highly caffeinated energy shots or whatnot. Some people might be lured into using those, but those are, in my opinion, a very bad idea. And medical experts also say, because it's such a concentrated shot of caffeine, that you can definitely have some strange reactions to it.
Oh, and I wouldn't even drink one just to keep myself awake in the afternoon. They just scare me.
Yeah. But there are people that do it, especially younger people who may be used to having them in other situations, or it used to be that the companies would come by and give them out at sporting events, even. And so they, you know, are thinking, oh, it's an energy drink. Well, maybe I should use this when I'm out exercising. Well, no, and because it's too concentrated of energy, and it's not good. You can have some strange reactions to the things that are in those. They're definitely, you know, if you read the ingredients, you're going to think there's nothing natural in there. Although I actually enjoyed using green tea as a hydration drink back 10 years ago. I haven't used it in a while, but I kind of enjoyed that.
Wow. You know, for people who are really concerned about things that could be the color of toilet water, yeah, green tea would be a great solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I have friends that use the coconut water, which is another popular one. And natural coconut juice does contain the perfect balance of electrolytes for our body. So that's another thing that you may want to go to if you want to try something a little more natural that contains electrolytes and some natural sugars.
Okay. Is there anything I didn't ask you about that you would like to add?
Well, I another caution I would just have is that I have so many friends that carry their water bottles in their hand as they're walking. And because I come from a medical background, I'm just concerned that that's not great ergonomics. And okay. You may well end up with stress in your neck and shoulder, as well as your elbow, from carrying a pound of water or more in your hand for a long period of time. It's so much better if you just buy a fanny pack that holds a water bottle, or wear a backpack that's ergonomically designed to put the water bottle in there. You'll probably get away fine with using it for a short walks. If you're only going a mile at a time, okay. But if you're walking for an hour or 2 hours, do not carry it in your hand.
I just can't imagine doing that. It just makes me uncomfortable. And even switching it from hand to hand, it's not comfortable.
No. And you may end up with, as I say, it may not be your hand that feels it. It's going to be your neck and your shoulder, and tensing your neck and shoulder. And you could end up with aches and pains and repetitive stress injuries in the long run. I think some people do it just because they think it's convenient. They don't want to wear something on their stomach. They don't want to wear something on their back. But it's just give in and look unfashionable. I actually have a whole article of 10 dorky things I wear walking. So,
oh, I'll have to look for that.
Give people permission to look unstylish. Actually, you're going to look great at a race because everybody's wearing everything you could ever imagine. I just did a half marathon on 4th of July, and a guy ran it wearing full fireman turnout and carrying an axe.
That amazes me.
And another gal who was wearing a traditional Indian or Pakistani shalwar kameez, you know, she and good athletic shoes.
Wow.
And she was not that much slower than I was.
So are the hydration rules different for walkers from what they are for runners?
I do not think they are, and although because we're out there longer, it might become even more of a problem. I would think, because just in general, so I'm doing a half marathon in 3.5 hours compared to a runner in 1.5 to 2 hours. That's right. 2 more hours that I'm out there, that at home I drink more often than once per hour, just sitting and working at a desk, so you're definitely going to need it. And I have been at races where they folded up the water tables or ran out of water or ran out of cups. I've been at them where they still had water, but they ran out of cups.
Oh, no.
So which is another reason why I always carry enough water with me, and then by the end of the race, I drink it, and that's a couple of pounds less I'm carrying on my back, so I feel more energetic.
So the big thing is to keep drinking. Drink when you're thirsty. Carry it with you if you have concerns about the race. Carry it with you if you're doing it on your own. And don't drink just water if you're going to be out more than an hour.
Correct. Yes.
Can you think of anything else?
One more thing. You might want to practice how to drink out of those little cups they give you at the water stops. There is a technique. You want to slightly fold the cup, bend it, so that you can pour it easily into your mouth and not just down your shirt. But
and when it's really hot, grab 2 cups so you can pour one over your head.
Oh, yes, definitely.
There's one race that we've done a couple times in Parkersburg, West Virginia, that will often have ice cubes. And, man, those are great to put in your hat.
Oh, yes.
It's an August race.
Mm-hmm.
So you have hills and over 80-degree temps, and the ice is just amazingly wonderful.
Oh, that sounds great.
I used to joke with people that I got done with the race and had frostbite on my head. Well, there's nothing else we can think of.
Okay.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me, Minnie, today. I really appreciate it. And what is your website again?
It's walking.about.com.
And if they just want to look for you, how do you spell Bumgartner?
Bumgardner.
But if they just go to walkingabout.com, they should find you.
Yes, they should. Or searchabout.com for walking, and I should pop up.
Well, you do pop up pretty early in almost every walking search I do, so I don't think there's going to be a problem finding you.
Yeah, I'm Walking Wendy. Just Google Walking Wendy, and I bet I'll be in the top results for Walking Wendy.
Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity.
So what did you think? It was a pretty good episode, right? I want to thank my friends Deb and Pat for sitting down to talk to me immediately following a 5K race. Though Deb has helped me out quite a bit, it took a little convincing to get Pat to agree to it. And they were such troopers. We found out as we were setting up for the interview that my microphone had broken. And the two of them were great about sitting around, all of us huddled around my little laptop. And I think it turned out pretty good. I also want to thank Wendy Bumgartner again for being my very first phone interview. I'm really excited about the opportunities that's going to give me. By the way, I do have a new microphone, and I have not played with it yet, so I'm not sure how to work it, but I will be using it for the next episode, and I'm sure the audio quality will be much better. If you are interested in following me on Twitter, I am at Walk Magazine. On Facebook, I'm at Walk Newsletter. Don't ask, don't know why I did that, but now I can't change the name. And my blog is at walk-magazine.com. I'm an editor. I cannot say walk-dash. I have to say walk-hyphen, just the way I am. If you listen to this podcast on iTunes, please rate the podcast. I don't have any ratings yet, and it will really help me show up in searches if I get a rating, especially if you get a good one. So please feel free to do that. The Walk With Me theme song was written by Gordon Lehman and recorded at Real Time Audio. The recording engineer was Eric Delagarde, and was produced by Eric Delgarde and Gordon Lehman. Vocals by the wonderful Whitney Wilson, and cello by Madeline Hansen. Guitar and Fender Rhodes by Gordon Lehman. Thanks, Gordon. As I always like to say, why run slow when you can walk really fast?
Walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity.
with me.